Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
What is this, amateur hour?
Yeah, I ain't no Superman businessman like you. You know, I'm just an
amateur,
I suppose.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
Amateur hour is the best podcast in the world. Yeah. Amateur hour is the best podcast in the world. Come on. Uh-huh. This is a show about the Chiefs, the football team that plays in Kansas City. Friendship and fun and stats that you won't believe. AHPKC will begin shortly. Hey, hey. Hey, Dirk. Are you ready? Let's do this thing. Come on, let's go. Let's go. It's football time. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, everybody. That's right. It's time. It's time again for Amateur Hour. I am Ryan Scott Hall, and the man across the table from me in the brand new Chiefs stocking cap, it's his darkness.
What's up?
You made a face when I said across the table. Is that because we're like across the universe, technically?
We are not sitting at a table together, no.
I mean, it's
the virtual table.
It still sort of feels that way, but I mean, I know we're not like really sitting with each other.
I am staring deeply into your eyes. I will say that.
They look probably pretty glassed over, right? Because I've been awake for
20 minutes. Yeah, they do. What you been doing, buddy? What you been doing over there?
Been sleeping one off, man. All right. So
Ryan worried about old Durkee here oversleeping this podcast. Guess who overslept it? Guess who did it? The responsible one. Yeah, responsible was, Scott Hall.
It was me. That's correct. That is correct. Dirk,
who's the goose?
Dirk, we have some breaking internet news. The Chiefs have acquired Antonio Brown. He's eligible for the playoffs. The Chiefs are officially the best team in the NFL now with Antonio Brown added to the offense.
Oh.
Just kidding. But he really hates Ben Roethlisberger.
January Fools.
He finally came around to hating Roethlisberger as much as the rest of the universe. The only like real news I did see was that Eric Bieniemy, among a few other interviews that he has scheduled, has finished his interview with the New York Jets. How would you, Dirk, feel about trading Eric Bieniemy for Todd Bowles?
I would feel great about that. I mean, I mean, I feel the same way about losing Bieniemy as I did all the other guys. I just, I don't think it's going to affect the team because I don't think those guys leaving affected it too much. And it's just kind of the Chiefs offense just keeps rolling. I mean, Andy's obviously the head honcho here, but Bowles would be a great pickup for a defensive coordinator, it would seem like. I haven't looked at him too much, but yeah, it would seem like would be the way to go, but it's crazy how like just the hot hire in the NFL right now is just whatever Reed disciple is next. Like I know Bieniemy is probably scoring a lot of these interviews to fulfill the Rooney rule. Unfortunately, because I kind of look, it's just like four interviews scheduled. Is he really like that hot of a commodity? But for, you know, obvious reasons, he is picking up all those interviews. He's just like kind of the hot candidate. So see if anything actually comes of it. But I mean, is there any doubt that he eventually gets a job? Is there any doubt that Mike Kafka, who is 31 right now, he's going to score a job before he turns 35? Like, as long as Doug Peterson and Matt Nagy are having the success that they are, like, it's just going to be a constant stream of whoever Andy picks next, he's on the beeline to becoming an NFL head coach.
Well, and with Bieniemy specifically, like, you know that he's going to have Andy's ringing endorsement. I really like Eric Bieniemy. I honestly don't know what he would be like as a head coach. I mean, the only track record with that was a very short stint at – or wait, he wasn't a head coach at Colorado, was he? I don't think that's right. They were talking about maybe interviewing him. Never mind. We don't have any track record of Eric Bieniemy being a head coach, so that's fine. Just forget I said anything. what I will say, though, is that with Todd Bowles, I mean, I feel like Kansas City Chiefs fans right now are basically in a place of firing Bob Sutton is a foregone conclusion. And I am here to tell you that all of the things that you're trying to prepare yourself to be disappointed for, maybe potentially a playoff exit, like that's the thing that you should really be keeping an eye on. I don't think there's any guarantee that Bob Sutton is gone. Now, with that being said, this is kind of where I want to start the show today. First and foremost, welcome to 2019, Dirk. We are officially covering the 2019 Chiefs.
And it's been a long time coming. A long time coming. 2019 Chiefs, finally here.
As you have mentioned, you never specified whether 2019 meant January of 2019 or the 2019 season. So,
well, no.
For hedging.
No. That was a joke. The intent, and I think I have clarified, but it was for the 2019 season Chiefs. So the dreams that I dreamt up, you know, many years ago, many moons ago, was about the 2019 Chiefs season. So it would be for next year that I saw. But you know what? I will take all the credit if we win the Super Bowl this year. I will take all of it.
I'm not surprised by that. well, here's what we know. As of right now today, it is the second day of 2019, Wednesday at about 12:45. And the Chiefs have Mahomes field advantage throughout the AFC playoffs. What that really means for those of you keeping score at home, the Chiefs are two home games away from the Super Bowl. And those games would be played on January 12th, which is a Saturday, and January 20th, which is the following Sunday. Those are the only two games left that stand between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Super Bowl, and both of them would be played at Arrowhead Stadium. And as it relates to potentially firing Bob Sutton, as we were talking about before, I wanted to reset real quick. You know, I think that the biggest difference for fans, at least, with potentially firing Bob Sutton is that a lot of us at different times, we struggled to believe that Alex Smith was the quarterback that the Chiefs could win a Super Bowl with. And now that we all know what's possible with Patrick Mahomes, people want to, as best they can, like remove any potential stumbling block. And so they look at Bob Sutton and the way the defense has played and say, okay, so when Alex was the quarterback, we had to build everything up around him and try to make the team as good as possible to remove, you know, any potential challenges or hurdles that were inside the building. Well, now we're looking at it and saying, we got to try to build things up around Mahomes, but like if there's anything on the team that could prevent us from winning a Super Bowl, it's Bob Sutton and the defense. So let's just get rid of him. The biggest thing that I think the Chiefs can do right now, because Bob Sutton is the defensive coordinator and the talent is what it is on defense, even if they're shuffling guys in and out of the lineup, trying stuff right now, and we'll get to that. But I think the number one thing that we need to see as far as maybe like a change is concerned is that in these playoffs, in these two games that stand between the Chiefs and the Super Bowl, Andy Reid needs to task himself with one thing, and that's don't trust the defense. I know that this is something that Andy, number one, throughout his tenure, has kind of had to do. The Chiefs were a defensive team up until 2017, and they leaned on the defense, and it was all about, you know, the different times we were looking at the Alex Smith statistics about the Chiefs or Alex Smith's record when opponents score more than 24 points. I think we went through the entire 2015 season saying, all right, well, if the Chiefs score 21, then we're going to win. because of how they were able to lean on the defense, and the defense was so good in scoring. Well, that's not the case anymore. And the Chiefs are not a balanced football team. They don't play complementary football. And right now, they are driven by the offense. The offense is what they're good at. And so any of these marginal calls for Andy Reid, it's 4th-and-3, 4th-and-2, 4th-and-5 even. Like, the Chiefs need to stop thinking about punting and playing field position and trying to set their defense up for success, and they need to lean on what works. They cannot trust the defense to get things done for them in these playoffs. They got to go with their bread and butter, and that's Patrick Mahomes, and that's scoring as many points as possible, because otherwise I think they're setting themselves up for failure. Where do you stand on that?
Oh, no, I'm totally, absolutely with you. And I really feel like Andy has been, super aggressive for most of the season. I'm trying to pull up some fourth down statistics here to see if I can figure that out. But in the last couple of weeks, he had the Chargers, I believe it was a 4th-and-3 on their side of the field, and he punted. And then even this week against the Raiders, a 4th-and-5 at the Raiders' 40-yard line, and he punted. And I think those are kind of two of the for instances where you'd like to see Andy go for it. And it looks like the Chiefs are, you know, about 10th or 12th or so here in fourth down attempts, just eyeballing it.
That's a 10th. So I thought for some reason, maybe it's the inverse of this, where they've allowed the most fourth down conversions. But for some reason, I thought the Chiefs had completed or successfully gained the most fourth down conversions in the NFL this year.
Well, I was actually off, so I organized them here. They're 20th in fourth down attempts, but they have converted 12 of them. So they probably rank pretty high here in fourth down conversions, in the top 10 of the league, but only 20th in fourth down attempts. So maybe they haven't been that aggressive overall, but I felt like through the beginning of the year, Andy just made some super aggressive calls, even in their own territory. And maybe he's just at a point where, you know, if it's 4th-and-inches, we're going to be going for it. But 4th-and-5 is outside of his comfort zone. That may be his thinking. That's not my thinking. I'm totally with this line of thinking. If we're going to go down swinging, I'd much rather it be on a 4th-and-5 that we didn't pick up instead of a drive at the end of the game where we have to have a defense not let them get a field goal or something like that. Like, put the ball in the offense's hands, put it in Mahomes' hand, put it in Andy's hands. But yes, I'm totally with this line of thinking that it should not. You should do everything you can to have the offense decide the game. So that's why those two punts have been a little concerning, because I think those are definitely two situations where I'd like to see the Chiefs to have gone for it.
Well, and, you know, there's a few reasons in here. I mean, a lot of people have said, perhaps more eloquently than I'm able to, but basically, you don't want to trade the MVP of the NFL for one of the league's worst defenses. And that's what you do when you decide to punt, and especially situationally when you're looking at some of these – you know, 4th-and-shorts on the opponent's side of the field. And I mean, I think it was in Mellinger's article after that Chargers game, it was like the Chiefs decide to punt when it's 4th-and-3 from the Chargers 40-yard line. And three plays later, the Chargers are in Chiefs territory. And some of that is due to one long completion, but that's the kind of stuff that you're looking at. And I mean, I'm not great when it comes to situational football, but I can tell the difference between how dangerous the offense is and what their ability is to put other teams in bad spots, and the inverse being the defense. And I'm going to take Patrick Mahomes in the offense every time.
Yeah, and I mean, you're right around the area. I mean, yards, with the way the Chiefs team is built, with a great offense and a bad defense, yards just come easy. So, I mean, 30, 40 yards is nothing in a Chiefs football game. Now, if you have the Bears team, then it's an actual argument, because 30 or 40 yards means a lot, because their offense, I mean, maybe the Bears isn't the best example because their offense is actually pretty good. But imagine a ball control team. It's just 30 or 40 yards, you know, means a whole lot more than it does in a Chiefs game. 30, 40 yards can two plays, for the either whether on offense or defense. So possession of the ball is what's critical. And so it's too valuable of a thing to just voluntarily give up, where, you know, maybe if you're in that area, in that 40 to 50 yard area, you know, pretty much any fourth down, I'm looking at going for it because, you know, unless you can pin them inside the five and like really hamper the next offensive drive. And even then it's, you know, 50-50, whether that factors in, that's just a zone where, you know, anything up to like fourth and 10, I am very seriously considering going for it.
So the last time that we talked was after the last second loss to the Chargers. So over the past two games, I know that you did your Periscope, but over the past 2 weeks, you get kind of I don't want to say like polar opposite results in the Seahawks game and in the Raiders game. But based on some of your comments from the Periscope, it sounds like you might believe that because you were saying that you felt like Seattle was the first team maybe all season that really handled the Chiefs. And then you look at the way that the Chiefs went out against Oakland, and I mean, it's 35-3. And honestly, their ability to quick strike and score offensively, I remember seeing at the end of the first half that the Raiders had 20 minutes time of possession and the Chiefs had 10 and we were, you know, winning 14-0 basically. So a lot of times for the Chiefs, and I mean, granted, if you're playing Derek Carr and he's going to turn the ball over at will like that, that certainly helps. But a lot of times for the Chiefs, some of the statistics that I think people traditionally have looked at to determine like how the game is going, what the flow of the game is like, and ultimately what the scoreboard might look like, you got to throw that stuff out the window because of what this Chiefs offense is capable of, how explosive they are, as you mentioned, that 30 or 40 yards can be gained in a moment's notice. But it sure seems like the formula that other teams are using is that they want to keep the Chiefs offense off the field. And the Chiefs defense hasn't really been able to contribute to that by getting stops on third down. I do remember in the Periscope you mentioning that like through it was the first six or seven or eight games, you know, the Chiefs defense, we were talking about how they were like 10 to 15% better than the rest of the field, I think, at getting opponents off the field on third down. They were really good out of the gate. And then suddenly it was just this, you know, hurricane of teams being able to convert on third down, and the Chiefs are really bad third down defense now. I don't really know what to make of the Chiefs defense as a whole, but I think that it's important that we look at this last game that the Chiefs defense has played and try to figure out if this is something that is more maybe about Oakland being bad, or if the Chiefs are maybe turning the corner just a little bit, just enough to give us some hope for what they might be able to do in the playoffs. And I want to bring that up and start with the fact that I think that the big reason that the Chiefs defense performed well on Sunday is this seemed like it was the best performance from the inside linebackers so far this season. And that's a really, like, you know, much maligned group, Anthony Hitchens and Reggie Ragland. And Ragland has the interception. I thought Hitchens was all over the field and playing with a lot of emotion. And I think that that lent to having a really great performance. I don't know if that's going to continue, but I think that that at least was a little bit promising to see two guys that we thought we were going to be leaning on all year finally playing with what looked like at least some confidence, right?
All right, yeah. So a lot to unpack there. I do have in my notes that was probably Anthony Hitchens' best game of the season. It was kind of reminiscent of like the first couple weeks where like he didn't look great on every play, but he kind of like laid the wood on a few different hits, and that's enough to like at least fire up the team. It's at least enough to like send a message to the offense, like hey, we're playing some physical defense, like we're actually playing the game here. Whereas you know, you've seen a couple games where it's just like the Chiefs defense almost has no emotion out there. So I almost wonder if they got into Anthony Hitchens like, hey, you have to be the emotional leader of this team. Like we paid you this chunk of money. Like this is something you have to do. So yeah, combine that with like Reggie Ragland making an interception. So yeah, I would say it's fair to say that was the best game of the season. But back to my Periscope from last week, I had two reasons why the Chiefs team had kind of fallen off, like why they were so great the first 8 weeks of the season and kind of struggled the next 5 or 6 weeks kind of thing. And it was because the offense wasn't jumping out to an early lead, which we did see against Oakland. They jumped on them, got the touchdown on the first drive, didn't score on their second possession, but on the Raiders' second possession got the defensive touchdown. So then you're playing with a 14-0 lead, and that's really it's more of a thing that helps the defense more than anything, because if they're allowed to play with a lead, then they can kind of play that bend but don't break style, and it opens the opposing offense up to, okay, you're going to have to put – the way to beat it is to put like 13-play drives together. That's what you're going to have to do. But a team like the Raiders, not really capable of doing that without shooting themselves in the foot over and over, which you saw. And so the question of whether – how much credit does the defense deserve is a good one, because, you know, so that first fumble that they had is just Doug Martin fumbling it. You know, you got to get that 30-year-old running back touches in week 17 of a 4-12 season or whatever the Raiders doing.
No,
great, no great strategy there.
Bailey? No credit to Alan Bailey.
That no, great, man. Great. No, it's fantastic play, but you know, you have to judge whether this is going to, you know, continue going forward. And you want a team that's kind of poking at the ball all the time like that, but it's not something you want to rely on, is just stripping the ball like that. It's plays that you need to be made, but not something you can really bank on, I guess I'd say. Second interception, you know, obviously Jared Cook with one of the weirder NFL plays you'll ever see, just quitting on the route. I thought Sorensen made a pretty difficult catch that kind of gets overlooked. Like, people are saying it's like the easiest pick six. The actual catch, I think, was not that easy, despite the weird play. But where I do think that the Chiefs defense deserves a lot of credit is two things. There's only four penalties on the Chiefs in the entire game, and none on the defense. And that was one of the I did a little deep dive just into like how bad the Chiefs were with penalties this year. Just way worse than the second team in terms of flags thrown overall. It was the gap between first and second. So they're at first, and some teams at second was the same as between second and 24th in the NFL. Just leaps and bounds ahead of everybody else in terms of flags thrown. And a lot of that was on the defense. I mean, they led the NFL on defensive pass interferences and defensive holdings and encroachments. It was just like all these stats that they're just the worst in the NFL. So zero penalties against the Raiders. They really cleaned that up. And then not allowing the Raiders to advance past the 32-yard line the entire game. That's just an incredible stat for a defense that has struggled as much as it did. And it's really just, you know, the Raiders kind of moved the ball, but it goes back to my, so I had the first complaint of the Chiefs weren't scoring early like they were early in the season. The second complaint was defense getting key stops, which kind of led to like the third down stats and the red zone stats. I mean, they never even sniffed the red zone. So, you know, I guess you give them a pass on that one. They weren't good on third downs necessarily, but, they made enough plays in terms of turnovers and then never let them sniff the red zone. So, both complaints that I had about the last 5 or 6 weeks, they really took care of this week. Now, you got to take all of that with a grain of salt in terms of you're playing maybe the worst team in the NFL at home. So, you know, it's not anything what the playoffs is going to be like, but still, I would say a promising performance.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a Raiders, you know, left on the schedule. There's not a team like that. And we can go over the opponents before the day is done and maybe try to rank them or whatever. But continuing with the defense, you know, the other big thing that has happened over the last couple weeks that we haven't had a lot of opportunity to discuss is your boy, the Scandy Man, being relegated to the bench. And I mean full on bench, not getting any snaps defensively. And
what about the end of the game? End of the game, Skandrick out there with the scrubs. Oh. Ron Parker out there with the scrubs.
Okay. Well, I thought Parker played quite a bit in the Oakland game.
No, I don't think so. I mean, Sorensen was out there, then Lucas got hurt, and then they turned to Eric Murray. Even over Parker. So I think Parker was only out there for the end of the game.
So did Lucas get hurt, or did he get his feelings hurt after that choo-choo that the locomotive got, you know, knocked off the tracks?
And he got rolled up. Was that Tyrone Wheatley out there? Was that Zach Crockett that ran over him on the tracks?
I don't know. It was great, though. I thought that was really fun when, you know, you get all these Lucas locomotives. I think that's been hyped up a little bit too much there, Arrowhead Pride. A little too much. I think we're all excited to see what the young kid can do, but you might want to take your foot off the gas a little bit. Or maybe pull some coal out of the furnace for the locomotive tweets. I want to harken back to something that I mentioned at the beginning of the year, and then I like kind of completely 180'd and said, no, he's been playing great. At the beginning of the year, I said that I was worried about Orlando Skandrick, and I called him Orlandunta Skandrickson because I was afraid that we were going to end up at the playoffs, and this guy that's just way past his prime is going to get picked on all night by, Andrew Luck, perhaps? But I want to say this about Dunta Robinson. I actually don't want to say anything about Dunta Robinson. I want to say this about Orlando Skandrick. Forgive me.
Ryan, do not bring up Dunta Robinson and the Colts within the same 30 seconds of each other. Please, we have a sensitive fan base right now, and they suffer from PTSD, and we do not need to be triggering this right now. We do not need to be flaming this fire.
All right. I want to talk about Orlando Skandrick for a moment because I do think that I do not fault Andy Reid or Bob Sutton or anybody for deciding that they wanted to see what some of these young guys can do. The thing that I want people to recognize about Skandrick is that despite what some of you might say, and despite certainly in spite of all of the defensive holdings and pass interference calls, I really do think that at the very least, Skandrick played a lot better than any of us expected this year. And I know that there were some mixed results here and there. I think the biggest reason that they ended up sitting him down is because of miscommunication, not because of poor play. And when you have a guy that was a first-round pick in this league and has been a, he's a 10 or 12-year veteran, they made the decision that, like, look, dude, if you can't, before a play, stand there and talk to your teammate and get it right, like, why do we have you out there? Like, you need to be one of the leaders in the secondary just because of who you are and what your age is. Like, we want to be able to rely on you to do that. And if you're not going to do that, if you're going to make rookie mistakes, then we might as well have rookie speed and strength and agility and, promise and potential on the field instead of trotting you out there. And I'm sure that Skandrick understands that. And I mean, I'm not in the locker room. I'm not in the meetings. I'm not on the practice field. So I can't say this with a surety, but I'm fairly certain that he's probably handled this benching like a pro. And so all that being said, I want to ask you a little bit about Charvarius Ward, more so than Tre'Mont Smith, because the Tre'Mont Smith thing was he was basically just out there because Kendall Fuller was a late scratch against Seattle. And I did think, for what it's worth, Tre'Mont Smith made one of the more important plays of the game for the defense when he stripped that ball away from Doug Baldwin in the fourth quarter. It ultimately didn't matter, but breaking up that pass was pretty awesome. Now, with Charvarius Ward, there were a lot of people that were making jokes about how badly he got beat against the Seahawks. And to be honest, I think that he was the victim of Russell Wilson going full Russell Wilson, making some really incredible throws, and he and Doug Baldwin just having some peak moments for the Seahawks this year, all inside of a single game, and frankly, most of it inside of the fourth quarter. And then against the Raiders, I thought that Ward played really well. He's a guy that I think is built the way that most of our corners are not. I don't have the way, like what he's listed at right here in front of me, but just based on the way he plays bigger and stronger than the other corners that we have. And I think that that was one of the things entering the playoffs that we were probably concerned about. I mean, I know I was concerned about the fact that with basically three slot corners and guys like Steven Nelson and Orlando Skandrick constantly getting out-jumped for balls and having to use their hands a lot and getting penalized a lot in order to stick with receivers, that I think Charvarius Ward is actually a really nice change of pace for them. Have you been like, how do you feel about his play so far? And do you think that it was to try to get him ready for the playoffs in case they need him? Or are we going to see Charvarius Ward starting, opposite Steven Nelson or potentially opposite Kendall Fuller? And then Steven Nelson comes on the field in nickel. And that's what you're looking at for the starting defense, come January 12th.
Well, no, I think Nelson is still ahead of him. So I think it's Nelson and Fuller that are starting, and Ward is that third corner, and he's sliding outside when he comes on the field. I do think it's interesting. So I think Skandrick did get benched kind of directly because of that miscommunication. Like that 2-point conversion was so bad that they had just were fed up. I think it's something that not many people have talked about, because if people have talked about like accountability and stuff, and that's about as accountable as it gets right there. Just benching a guy for, one mistake, but at the most crucial of times. So Ward has played. Yeah, I do think it was overblown how bad he was against the Seahawks, because I agree that a lot of that was Russell Wilson's throws. It's interesting. Skandrick, the biggest knock on Skandrick, here's my case for Skandrick. The biggest knock on him is the penalties that he gets, and the NFL playoffs are officiated differently, where they allow more grabbing and stuff like that. So I feel like Skandrick would be a better player in that realm when it comes to the playoffs. But I feel like they've already made their decision. Like I feel like this week was the one that you'd roll out. I thought they kind of left it open-ended. They could have gone with Skandrick or Ward this week. And I thought they kind of made the decision that Ward was their guy moving forward.
Well, and one thing real quick on that idea that Skandrick might be better in the playoffs because they're going to officiate it differently. Like the only reason that I'm hesitant on that is because I think that at this point, the refs probably have it. And I don't want to say they have it out for him, but like he's got a reputation based on his performance this year of pass interference or defensive holding, to where they're probably going to be watching him close and still like maybe more likely to throw a flag on him than, you know, someone like Richard Sherman or something. That's he's not in the playoffs, but you know what I mean? Someone that plays aggressive like that, but is considered a better player than Skandrick.
I'm with you. And then also, you know, going back to that Chargers game, I feel like something maybe they just kind of felt as a unit, as a defensive team. I mean, the Chargers' go-to play at the goal line was just fades to Mike Williams. I mean, that's what they were throwing, and he kind of used his 6'4", 6'5", body to just, you know, body our smaller corners out, and that worked, you know, at least twice, I guess, and they kind of went to it on the two-point conversion too, even though he ended up wide open. I mean, that looked like it was might have been the backup plan, like, hey, we're just going to throw this up, throw a little back shoulder to Mike Williams. He's just going to use his body. Is Charvarius Ward, do we know if he's taller, right? I mean, we just kind of brought that up, but he does look a little taller, a little lankier.
I think he's just a bigger guy. I'll Google, but I mean, I brought that up mainly just because
6'1". He's 6'1". So I think that's probably taller than the rest of the corners.
The Google not exactly sure, but for Charvarius Ward, by the way. It's Charvarius Ward Chiefs, and Charvarius Ward red hair. Love that red hair coming out the red helmet, Charvarius. You're looking good, bud.
It's beautiful. I do want to say he's been targeted like nonstop the last two games. Like I saw there was a pass thrown at Steven Nelson in like the fourth quarter, and I was just like, that's the first time I've seen Steven Nelson in this game. Like I didn't even know he was playing. So teams are definitely picking on him, and it almost kind of has the feel like our defensive fate is going to be coming down to Chartavius Ward or whatever. I got to get his fucking name right Charlie Ward.
There you go.
Charlie Ward.
That's what we'll call.
He's back. But I do. I just feel like if he plays, and you know, this could be true for Skandrick too. I mean, he'd get targeted probably just as much. But I think that's the last couple weeks. I mean, the Seahawks threw at him probably 15 times in that game. It was a lot. It was just over and over. Mm-hmm. And I do think he still gives like a little too much cushion, because there was a lot of Jordy Nelson, 8-yard catches that were just really, really easy. And it seemed like he was usually on the other end of that. But I just have this feeling like our fate is going to come down to Charvarius Ward getting targeted 15 times and, you know, anytime an important play. But I do think you can hide him a little bit on the outside. It's not like he'll be like matched up with Julian Edelman in the slot or something like that. So you will be able to hide him a little bit, but I do think he'll get targeted a whole bunch in the playoffs.
Well, and some of it is going to depend on, you know, who they're playing, what the matchup is, because I mean, I look at teams' ability to dictate who they're going to get matched up with unless you let your corners travel, which Bob Sutton does not. And I mean, at least for me, like the nightmare scenario that came into my brain was Charvarius Ward having to cover. Well, I mean, no, it's DeAndre Hopkins. I know that like having to get to Houston is going to be an interesting path to see Chiefs Texans. But if you do get that game, like DeAndre Hopkins is going to have a field day on Charvarius Ward. I mean, I think he can be competitive with a guy like that. But, you know, Keenan Allen, too. Keenan Allen hasn't really looked like himself since that Chiefs game. He hasn't had the same kind of impact because he tweaked his knee or whatever. So that's helpful. But, I mean, generally speaking, I think that the Chiefs defense is in an interesting spot. And they're sort of enigmatic because the Chiefs are tied for the most sacks in the NFL this year. I mean, they had 52 as a defense. Like, that's amazing. That's a lot of sacks, man.
Do you know how many the Raiders had?
Wasn't it like 12 or 13?
13 sacks.
That's fantastic. what was the really bad year for our defense? Wasn't it right around that?
Like 12 or 13? I think it was 12 sacks,
yeah.
I think.
Well, I mean, here's the thing about this Chiefs defense. Their ability to get after the quarterback, I think it rests solely on the individual talent of Dee Ford, Chris Jones, and Justin Houston. That's it. I don't think it has anything to do with the situation. I don't think it has to do with whether the Chiefs are up. And as I was hoping that the Chiefs would be able to play sort of similar to those Colts teams where you have a lead and you go into the fourth quarter and you just let your pass rush unleash on teams. Because I also think that despite the fact that the Colts had the ability to score very quickly, Peyton Manning is so much more methodical than a guy like Patrick Mahomes, to where I think that the way I remember Peyton Manning, and maybe this is late career Peyton Manning, but Peyton Manning was the king of 10 to 12 play scoring drives where he's eating up the clock and getting just what he needed to get a first down. And if the Chiefs were going to be like that, the way that Patrick Mahomes has been playing this year, then you'd probably see him running for a few more first downs, you know, trying to live to fight another play instead of him going for the spectacular and the knockout punch as often as he does. And so when I look at the Chiefs defense and the way that they complement the offense, and especially as it relates to the pass rush, like I don't think that it has much to do with anything other than Dee Ford, Chris Jones, and Justin Houston are just talented at getting after the quarterback. And with that being said, I don't really know what to expect from them, regardless of who the opponent is as we enter these playoffs, because we don't really know what the status of Eric Berry is, and that might be just a whole nother 20 minutes that you could spend trying to figure out what you should do with him. And when you start looking at some of the personnel decisions that they've made throughout the season, and it's not just the recent Charvarius Ward versus Orlando Scandrick, it's figuring out situationally when and how long and in what situations you want to have a guy like Dorian O'Daniel on the field. And going from early in the year having Eric Murray be like a guaranteed every play guy on defense to now being like, do we even want Eric Murray on the field? You know, what are the best decisions that this team can make? And I just think that even inside of this season, the personnel on defense has changed so much. And really like their trust in guys and what you expect from different guys has changed so much. I mean, if you think about when we entered this season, what we all thought about Dee Ford compared to right now, where I think Dee Ford is kind of the linchpin in what they do defensively as far as the pass rush is concerned, that he opens things up for both Justin Houston and Chris Jones, that his sack numbers have tailed off because he's getting that much attention. I mean, there's been a lot of things that we had no clue that the Chiefs defense was going to look the way that they do now. And a lot of that is inside of the personnel. And so I think that the defense really is just like a total wild card. I don't know what to expect from them as we, you know, get into maybe even game specific matchups, if that's something that you want to do.
No, I mean, I'm with you. I mean, I think we know pretty much, I feel like I know pretty much what the defense is, but I kind of get that they're a wild card at the same time. It's just, it just comes down to the opposing offense being efficient. If they're going to be able to put 12 to 14 play drives together, they are going to score points. Like, it's just, we're not going to get that many stops, I don't feel like. But if you're able to get a sack in there, or, you know, get some turnovers or something like that, like, they're just going to have to make individual plays like that. And I think that kind of leads credence to, it'd be Dee Ford, Chris Jones, or Justin Houston's the ones that are doing it. Like, it's just, they get this lead against the Raiders, and then they're able to tee off in this passing game. And that leads to, you know, stripping the quarterback. And so if they're not ahead, then you have them kind of playing back on their heels. They're not teeing off in the pass. They're kind of, are they running or passing? And it kind of takes away the only strength the defense has. So I think that's just what's ultimately important. And then if the Chiefs are playing with a lead, it's just about the opposing offense staying patient. I mean, the Titans game, the Titans playoff loss is the ultimate example last year. They're down 21-3, but they never panicked. They kept running the ball, and they kept just like, we're going to only have three or four drives, but we got to get a touchdown on every single one of them kind of thing. And they just had these sustained drives with continue to running the ball. And that's what works against this defense, and what kind of always has, or at least the last couple of years against this defense.
Outside of the obvious choice of Baltimore, I don't think the other teams in the AFC playoffs have the ability to play like that. They're all going to be leaning on the passing game. I don't think that even like with 100% healthy Melvin Gordon, that's the way that the Chargers would play. So you're talking about some of these other teams that they have to be really methodical, and they want to try to do your 12 to 14 play drives. And that's not to say that these other teams can't. But certainly when it comes to staying patient, and at least when I think about the way that both Pittsburgh and Tennessee, the last two home playoff losses, the results of those games, it revolved around what the running backs were doing. And I don't see a running back in the AFC. Melvin Gordon, I would say, is best positioned, but I don't really see a team with a running back in the AFC that could control a game like that. And it's Baltimore's running attack as a whole. And outside of that, like, I mean, maybe the Patriots can do it. Maybe. But,
well, I think with like a Patriots or Chargers, I mean, I think Brady and Rivers are both equipped to do it with the passing game. Mm-hmm. I don't think a lot of teams out there can do it, but I think they are both methodical enough that they could kind of control the game from a passing game standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think they're capable of it, but, you know, I don't know.
So
which of the three teams would you like to see?
So we've got essentially right now the Chiefs' options for this home playoff game on the 12th are the Chargers, the Ravens, and the Colts, right?
Yeah, so if the Colts win their game, the Colts are coming to Kansas City. That's a very winnable game for them. I think they're kind of playing better than the Texans right now. But it is in Houston. So if the Colts win, they're coming to Kansas City. If not, it's just the winner of the Chargers-Ravens game, which should be highly competitive. I kind of think the Ravens win personally. Kent Swanson put up a poll for Chiefs fans, like, who would you rather see? Essentially got a whole bunch of votes. So I thought that was interesting results. It was 50% Colts, 31% Chargers, and 19% Ravens.
All right, so I disagree with Chiefs fans. If I could handpick our opponent out of those three teams for round two, I am taking the Chargers, and I am going to feel great about it.
Interesting.
I don't think that the Chargers are going to win two games in Arrowhead in the same season. I just don't see that happening. And frankly, the Chargers have led the Chiefs for 4 seconds out of two full games. And when you look at some of the mistakes that were made in that Thursday night contest, I give me the Chargers, man. Give me the Chargers. Because when I look at the Colts, like, number one, I'm way more fearful of what Andrew Luck can do than what Phillip Rivers can do. Now, I know that in terms of the weapons, I think that Andrew Luck's weapons are really not that great. I mean, he's going to be throwing to guys like Chester Rogers instead of, you know, Keenan Allen and Mike Williams and Tyrell Williams and potentially Hunter Henry, the way that it is trending at this point. I mean, Ebron is great, and he's had an unbelievable season for them, more touchdowns this year than he had in like his 4 years in Detroit. And then you look at their running game. The running game's kind of all over the place, but if Marlon Mack is on, like, that guy is really explosive and can run through the Chiefs' defense. And quietly, although people may not recognize this, the Colts' defense is really good. They've played extremely well this year, despite the fact that we don't know many of the guys that play for their defense, but they're young and they're fast, and they have got some really great statistics to back up their performances. And I give me the Chargers, man. I would take the Chargers 10 times out of 10 because I don't want to have to play Baltimore again. I mean, Patrick Mahomes getting hit like 15 times in that game and it coming down to that unbelievable play on 4th and 9, not to mention that even if they did win, like what it's going to do to their bodies to have to play against a team like that. No, I don't think it's a hard fought game to go against the Chargers or the Colts. Like, Baltimore is definitely the one I least want to play, but I would take the Chargers over the Colts 10 times out of 10.
Yeah, man, I almost agree with you, and I feel like the Chargers are the best of the three teams, and like I still kind of agree with you, like, which is so weird.
The last 5 years, and it was like the last play of the game. I don't care. Like, give me the Chargers, man.
Yeah, I mean, you got Andy Reid against divisional folks, and then Bob Sutton. If there's one thing that he can kind of hang his hat on, is that he's done good against divisional teams, and he's done good against Phillip Rivers, because you know Rivers puts up pretty damn good numbers across the league, and then has really struggled against Kansas City outside of, you know, the end of that game. And even in that game, he threw two picks, didn't he? I mean, he didn't look great for a lot of that game. I mean, he obviously came through at the end, but it's not like he was just dicing us up the entire game. The Colts I see is just kind of like solid across the board. I feel like T.Y. Hilton's one of the more underrated players in the league. I think he never gets thrown in like the top receiver discussion.
We don't have any.
And I think he either. And yeah, and I think he kind of belongs there. I think he spends a lot of time in the slot. So I think Kendall Fuller would be matching up against him, which is probably favorable for us. Marlon Mack, I had him on both fantasy teams, so I kind of watched him closely. He can do some damage, and I think he would do some damage against us. And then just kind of solid on defense. Like, you don't know a lot of the guys. Like you said, Darius Leonard's obviously, he's supposed to win Defensive Rookie of the Year, and he's supposed to be a total stud. He's their inside linebacker. So I think the Colts are really just like a solid team, which I think could give us some trouble because they just work methodically and just don't have to do anything special, but just, you know, play within themselves. And that might be the kind of team that gives us trouble. The Ravens are the scariest team to me. I really felt like they outplayed us in that game against in Arrowhead. So I know they're not scared to come to Arrowhead. I thought we just had some Mahomes magic that kind of saved us in that game. And, you know, if we don't complete that 4th and 9, you know, first off, we don't have home field advantage right now. And we don't win that game. I mean, that was a game over type of play. And so they were that close to beating us. And it's just their running attack, man. I just don't want to see it. I just don't want to see it. I mean, obviously they have the worst quarterback of the three. And so you got to wonder about a quarterback, rookie quarterback playing on the road, that kind of thing. Like, passing this, that doesn't pass the sound test. Like, a rookie quarterback coming to Arrowhead for the playoff game, like that seems like what you would want. And yet, in watching the teams and watching the games, I don't want any part of them. So
I'll say this about the Ravens. I think that despite all the things that you said, like, one thing that might be in the Chiefs' favor is that the Ravens, for the most part, played a pretty perfect game at Arrowhead, and Mahomes still beat them. And even if it took some heroics and some magic moments at the end, that mental advantage that the Chiefs have, and like the Ravens may come back here and be like, man, like, look at how well we played throughout that entire game, and the fact that we pretty much controlled it and we still lost. Like, that might put some fear in them. It might energize them, and they can come in and be like, we know that we can play with this team and we know that we can beat them. But they might also like be walking in here thinking, damn it, we got to play against Mahomes again. Because, I mean, dude, they beat him up all game long, and he just kept firing, and we ended up winning the game. Like, that's got to be demoralizing for that football team.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've been on the other end of that, some of those losses, and then you just look at that quarterback like, let's not play against him. Mm-hmm. And Andrew Luck is one of those guys, really. Like, he's on the radar. Like, we've seen what he can do in a playoff game.
You want the Chargers. We should.
I think I want the Colts, man. I think I want to just, demolish the Gypsy curses inside Arrowhead. And I would just, oh God, I would never have wanted a game to win a game so bad in my life, just to play the Colts, for all the pain they have caused us. And now to finally have Mahomes and feel like whatever, I'd be an absolute nervous wreck, but I would, that's the game I want to win the most. If you're going to tell me we win, I want to beat the Colts more than the other two. But I definitely get the argument, and I think we might have the best chance against the Chargers.
I want the Chargers because I want to win, and I think the Chargers give us the best chance to win. But I guess I'll agree with you that if we're really, you know, if in the spirit of trying to get rid of past failures and all of the boogeymen in the Chiefs closet, we're playing the first game of the divisional round on Saturday at home against the Colts. Bring it all on. Bring it,
man,
all
it would on. Just- Maybe we don't want it because it would just be talked about all week, and I don't want those like thoughts in the players' heads. Like they would just be asked about it like all week, and there'd just be every story, like the Chiefs against the Colts, playoff history, and so then it would just like be on their minds. Whereas if we're playing the Chargers, like sure we'd talk about how the Chiefs haven't won at home in such and such years, but it wouldn't be like, hey, look at all these you know heartbreakers we've had against the Chargers in the playoffs, because I mean, there's none of those. We just have the one heartbreaker this year where it'd be like, hey, remember this game that you guys dominated and should have won and given away? Like, you get a chance to rectify that now. Mm-hmm. So I think I just talked myself into wanting the Chargers.
There you go. That's what you want. Now, I would be remiss, or we would, or everyone would be really upset if we didn't take time to kind of put the offense in its place, in its proper place. So I want to talk a little bit about the season that these guys have had, and maybe what we can expect after such historic performances from the Chiefs offense as we enter the playoffs. I do want to say this. I had this written down after the Seahawks game. And I don't know if it was just based on, you know, without Sammy Watkins, the Chiefs are a different team. How about this? You know, real quick, week 18 of Sammy Watch, he matters. will he play in the playoffs?
If he doesn't play in the playoffs, I am going to just unload on anybody within earshot about and complain about Sammy Watkins. Like, get your fucking ass in the game.
Yeah.
I remember those 4-week debates. I don't know how that was like 8 weeks ago. It seems like whether the 4 weeks had started already or not, but you know, it seems like 25 weeks since we've seen Sammy Watkins play. It's frustrating. And I probably shouldn't be blaming Sammy here. I should be blaming Brett Veach. I couldn't hear what you just said, but it's a sensitive topic to me. I'll say that.
So with the extra week of rest, he should absolutely be out there at this point. Like that's
you would think. I thought he would be back for like the Raiders game. I feel like he's going to be back every week, and then it's not even close. It seems like.
So I don't know if Sammy's going to be active for the playoffs, but I do think I think at this point it should be pretty unequivocal. Like Chiefs fans should know that he matters. He matters to this offense. He matters to how they are defended. He matters to their ability to be more explosive. I mean, I didn't even sit down and do the splits of like the Chiefs offense with versus without Sammy Watkins, because it should be patently clear. Every game that the Chiefs lost this year, Sammy Watkins was not a factor in. And we're talking like not a factor as in like wasn't playing. I mean, it's been really, really tough to watch the Chiefs offense try to put together solid performances when they're having to run out DeMarcus Robinson,
Dumb,
and Chris Conley, and now Kelvin Benjamin. Because I just none of those guys, they just don't bring to the table what Sammy Watkins does. I'm sorry. They just don't. They don't. Like, that debate is over as far as I'm concerned.
Chris Conley was abhorrently bad against the Raiders. Yeah, it was pretty embarrassing. And DeMarcus actually came up with a key play. I mean, he had one catch on the day. But, you know, DeMarcus has the physical skills, it seems like. He's just, you know, has to learn the playbook or has to know where to line up. Like, he just, and that's just stuff that, you know, in the playoffs, like, it's not something you want to be worrying about, is whether some guy, some schmo on the outside, whether he knows the playbook or whether he knows to line up right. I mean, what if we have a 90-yard catch like that, but he's not lined up on the line of scrimmage, so it comes back just because he's not lined up right? That's the kind of things that hopefully, you know, you'll get a lot less of that once Sammy Watkins is hopefully back for this playoff game. But, man, I've seen enough Chris Conley and DeMarcus Robinson and Demetrius Harris snaps for a lifetime. I just want to, as much as we can get them off the field, please do it.
How about the first play of the game against the Raiders? Holding or blocking the back on Harris on the kickoff return. I was just like, well, I mean, hopefully that means that he got it out of the way, but like, you just know it's coming. Like, it's not even, I don't even think it's comical anymore. Like, that guy has got to go. He's got to go. He brings like so much less to the table than what he ends up taking away. It's so frustrating. But what I was initially saying after that Seattle game, and then kind of bringing up all the different reasons why, the Chiefs are asking a lot of the quarterback, and he's delivering.
What?
But they're asking an awful lot of Patrick Mahomes, and I think that that's changed from the way that people looked at it early in the year when they said Pat Mahomes has all these weapons and he's incubated by, you know, all of the talent and the coaching and everything else. And don't get me wrong, like, he had the first pair of teammates to have, like, whatever it was, 1,300 yards and 10 touchdowns in team history. And you're
looking in NFL history.
Oh, in NFL history? Really?
In NFL history.
That's
first pair of teammates, 1,300 yards and 10 touchdowns in the same season.
Man, I would have thought Isaac Bruce and
I know, right? Holt
or Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne did that many times. All right. Well, that's awesome. I just, you know, you said that, like, you don't want to see the like, a legal procedure on a 90-yard touchdown in the playoffs. You think about the different things that you want to clean up. I mean, one of the other things that I, like, one debate I don't want to be having is Jeff Allen versus Cam Irving. What the hell was going on in Week 17 where they start Jeff Allen, and I'm assuming it's because they don't think Cam Irving's ready, but then Jeff Allen gets hurt, and they put Cam Irving out there. And then Jeff Allen comes back, and they put Cam Irving back on the sideline. And now I've got people trying to figure out whether or not, you know, Cam Irving, our offensive guard of choice, who got an contract extension and is more than happy to go out and defend our quarterback physically whenever he's getting chipped on by other, you know, players on the defense. I love Cam Irving, and I don't know if he's been benched or not at this point. Like, I don't know what's going on. I have
no idea. I have zero explanation. He was active in both of the last two games. You kind of figure, like, he's healthy enough to be active last week, but you know, just not healthy enough to that you want to start him, kind of thing. Like, just hopefully you don't have to play him. And whether that story stays the same for 2 weeks in a row, I mean, I guess. And maybe that's just, they're just trying to give him extended rest. And with that bye week, it's just, if he can get 3 or 4 weeks off together, like, he'll be like totally 100% and you insert him back into the lineup. But I have no idea whether to expect if he goes in or not. I don't know. I think he's clearly been the better player, even though I don't think Jeff Allen's been, has he been that bad? I mean, I guess I didn't notice against the Raiders. I think he was pretty bad the week before, maybe. But I think Cam Irving is definitely the better player. So I hope he's starting for the playoffs, but I have no idea.
Well, and so here's the thing. Like, I would think that if they're trying to give Jeff Allen snaps for whatever reason, to me, like, I wanted to say, well, maybe they're trying to figure out if LDT is going to be ready or healthy or what in order to try to add him into the lineup. And so they want to give Jeff Allen as many snaps as possible. But, like, I think your best five, if LDT isn't healthy, is Cam Irving at left guard and Jeff Allen at right guard over Andrew Wiley. And that to me says, well, if Cam Irving was good enough to come in when Jeff Allen was hurt against the Raiders and you want to try to get Jeff Allen snaps, then put Andrew Wiley on the bench and just play those five. But I don't know. They seem to like Andrew Wiley. I don't know. I would really like to just be able to step into any playoff game for the rest of my life completely happy and confident about like where the team is at. And any of these little things, because of our history, I'm just like, oh, God, why do I have to be talking about the Chiefs' left guard spot as I'm supposed to be preparing for this home playoff game as the one seed? Like, it doesn't make me happy. One thing that does make me happy is the way that Damian Williams has been playing over the last few weeks. I think that Damian Williams has maybe surprised a lot of people, a very pleasant surprise with his performances. But I do think, Dirk, I'm going to give you the floor for this because I think that maybe you have a little bit of fodder here. The one place that Chiefs fans might need to be a little bit worried with Damian Williams and maybe the Chiefs offense as a whole is when you get into red zone or maybe more importantly, goal-to-go situations. And I don't know if that's something that maybe having Spencer Ware come back healthy might be able to help a little bit if he's going to be more adept or the Chiefs have more faith in him than Darrell Williams or what. But despite how good Damian Williams has looked, he kind of looks maybe a little bit more like a between the 10s or between the 20s running back. And when they get into the red zone, they're going to have to figure some things out in order to be more efficient. Where do you stand?
Yeah, I mean, just short yardage situations in general. I've been watching it since the Kareem Hunt fiasco, and they just haven't been very good. And that's not all to be Damian. I mean, that's not Damian Williams' forte. He's a smaller guy, so it's not necessarily his fault. And it's not like it's all him anyways. I mean, a lot of it's the blocking. I mean, for years we complained about how the Chiefs weren't physical enough at the point of attack to just pick up like a third and one just on the ground. It seemed like they kind of got better at that. They kind of had like a good shotgun read option attack on short yardage this year where, you know, Kareem Hunt either getting it or Mahomes taking it around the end. And I felt like they had kind of figured out their short yardage situations. Why they're not sticking with that with Damian, I mean, part of it might be just they're kind of trying to test and see what they got. Like, is this something that we can rely on in the playoffs? And I felt like that's what the fourth and goal at the one was a lot of. It was a test. Like, is this something we can do? Can we line up on fourth and goal at the 1 yard line and just hand it off and punch it in? And unfortunately, I think the answer is no. So where do the Chiefs go from there? I mean, do they just, I think you'll see some fancy stuff. I think you'll see like a bunch screen pass on third and goal at the 2 yard line or something like that. Like, I think they'll have to get creative to move the ball in short yardage situations because the running game right now, it looks great when Mahomes is, you know, a threat, when the passing game is a viable option at a time when the defense is confident that they're going to run, they haven't been able to run. And that's just something the Chiefs are either going to have to figure out or counter. And whether that's just putting it in Mahomes' hands and letting him figure it out or getting cute with a reverse, with a screen, something like that. That looks really bad if you don't get it, but you know, looks great when it does work because it's just the Andy cute stuff. You just never know if it's going to work or not. But it is something that I'm definitely keeping an eye on going forward in the playoffs. Just like I'm kind of deathly afraid of like a third and fourth and one.
And I'm with you there. Now, here's the thing that I think that is interesting. We've talked a little bit about Andy Reid potentially saving things for different situations and having different plays in his pocket because he's so creative and all the different minds that they've had that have contributed to the offensive success of this team over the past few years. When you get this extra week to rest and prepare and really do some self-scouting and try to figure out, you know, what the best things that your team does and maybe the worst things that your team does in order to try to clean that up, I think that they can look at short yardage and say, yeah, we could do better here. And with that being said, one of the things that I feel confident about is Andy Reid being able to ideally come up with, you know, let's just call it two or three plays that they can run in those situations that we haven't executed all year. And whether those end up working or not, who knows, right? I mean, we had that conversation on the last show about, like, if you do something and it works, then I'm going to be like, yeah, that's great. And if you do something and it doesn't work, then I'm going to say, well, you should have done something else. Like, because we're always going to be talking about things in hindsight. But, I mean, like, one of the things that I have in mind, because I've seen them do this before, I've seen a lot of teams do this before, especially if you end up having a healthy Spencer Ware, and maybe it's a better sell if it's Anthony Sherman on the field because he's an actual fullback, but lining up in I formation and faking to the fullback and pitching to the running back, who, you know, running around the outside. I loved that play in Madden. I loved it, and I love the idea of running that, especially with a guy like Damian Williams, who's got really great speed, surprisingly good speed to be able to get to the edge. Now, the thing that I'm scared about is Andy Reid calling that play and then running it to the short side of the field. But, I mean, I do think that they're going to have some options, and I've got confidence that Andy Reid and the offense are going to be prepared. Do you have anything?
See, I do. Well, I was going to say real quick on that. I mean, I like that play too. The worry is if it gets red, like say it's second and goal at the one, and you run that play and it gets red, you know, that kind of, it could back you up to like the five or the six,
which,
like,
you,
it takes you out.
At least, I mean, it takes you out. Yeah. But, you know.
Yeah. So maybe you want that. I also like, I mean, if Sammy Watkins is back, he's such a good runner. I like the end around to Sammy Watkins in that situation. I kind of wonder if we break that back out. It's something we just haven't seen, obviously, because he hasn't been playing. And we've kind of teased it a lot with Tyreek, I feel. And he scored one on it this week, I guess. But I think Sammy Watkins is better equipped, especially in like a short yardage situation where, like, he'll actually put his head down and pick up tough yardage if need be. So I kind of wonder if that's in their bag of tricks in short yardage.
I mean, or what else? Pass to Kelsey too, because it's safe, because it could be an incomplete pass if he doesn't catch it. And, you know, Kelsey's a much bigger body that doing that, like in, you know, a goal to go situation, they feel like maybe he's going to be able to push himself through.
Teams are just ready for that now.
I really didn't like the handoff on fourth and goal. I mean, you want to be able to punch it in, but it was just like, I don't know. There was something that I just wish that there would have been a little bit different than just like, I'm going to run in between the center and the guard on fourth and goal. I
honestly think it was a test. I mean, I'm not crazy about the play call either, but I mean, I think it's Andy wants to know. He needs to know if they can rely on them and to get 1 yard when they need to. And I think if it was a test, he got his answer.
He got his answer. That it's time to put Cam Irving back out there. That's what he got. All right. Well, so I started with don't trust the defense. I want to reiterate, don't trust the defense, Andy. You got to go for it. You got to lean on Patrick Mahomes. You got to lean on your offense. You got to lean on the most valuable player in the NFL. Dirk, do you have any closing thoughts today that you would like to add? And I mean, I guess you could probably talk about
me not being able to go to this playoff game.
Figure it out. Figure it out, Ryan. You didn't take my advice yet?
So let me set the stage for you guys. January 12th is a Saturday, and it's during what Kansas City calls Restaurant Week, which is the busiest week of the year for every restaurant in Kansas City. It's a nightmare for restaurant workers because we just got through the busiest month of the year and you get like a 1 week break and then you're right back in. And with the game, I traded two shifts in order to not be working on Sunday, hoping that the Chiefs would finally get a Sunday playoff game. And of course, once again, the Chiefs are playing on Saturday. And I went in to work on New Year's Eve and got down on both knees and said, bosses, I beg to be able to go to this Chiefs game on Saturday the 12th. My family is coming in town from Bogota. They're coming all the way from South America for this game. and like, you know who I am. You know who I am. Like, you guys know this about me. It's so important. Like, this is like the most important thing of the year. I gotta go. And they looked at me and they laughed in my face and they said, there's no way that Saturday of restaurant week that you're going to be able to go. Now, they did say that they were thinking about bringing a TV upstairs, which we don't have TVs in the restaurant. So maybe I'll at least be able to watch it instead of like trying to avoid what happens in a Chiefs playoff game in a restaurant in Kansas City, which is impossible. I'm going to find out no matter what, which really, really sucks. But I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. My hope now is that by having the Colombian family, the Santos family, that the prestige and the I don't know, whatever, I'm going to have them come in on Friday night and try to talk my bosses into letting me go on Saturday. And I don't think it's going to work. But you know what? We're going to do everything we can.
Oh, wow. So that's an important dinner. Maybe I should stay away from that one.
I mean, I'm pretty heartbroken that I'm not going to be able to go, but I will be available on the 20th. Should the Chiefs host the AFC Championship game. So, I mean, maybe it's good that I won't be spending any money to go to the divisional game because the AFC Championship game is like $400.
Yeah. I mean, I told you you should call in sick, and you said that wouldn't work. So then I said you should call in dead.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I mean, if you're dead, you can't work, right? They'd have to figure something else out.
Yeah, but then I would be not dead when I need to go back to work the next week, or.
Well, I mean, we kind of got an in with some news stations now. I mean, we could fake something up, like, hey, local man thought to be dead. Was actually at Arrowhead. Spotted at Arrowhead.
Patrick Mahomes.
Patrick Mahomes revives him.
Revives a local Chiefs fan. Yeah. I don't think that's going to work. I mean, trust me, I have thought very seriously about whether or not I can afford to quit this job.
I think you can.
That I can go, and I can't.
I'm pretty sure you can. The podcast is doing well. Maybe the Santos. Maybe we need to start a GoFundMe for Ryan to quit his job. People like that.
they're really high on GoFundMe. I mean, technically, it's just so that I have money to pay all my bills while I'm getting my education. You know.
Yeah.
People,
the teachers of the world.
I think that that's a more worthwhile cause this time around, but, you know, whatever.
Two bums want to go on vacation.
Yeah, right. Right. Well, I mean, I'm anticipating not being able to go to this Chiefs playoff game. So it's on you, Dirk. It is on you.
Well, yeah, I've never walked out of Arrowhead Stadium disappointed. That's no way. No way it could happen on my watch. Right? Nothing bad ever happens at Arrowhead with me there.
I don't think the Santos family has been to a game when the Chiefs have lost. They went to the Atlanta game when Eric Berry had the pick two.
They went to the Raiders game where it was too cold for the Raiders.
Yeah, that was great. It was also a little too cold for Pacho in those loafers.
Too cold for the Santos. who's wearing some house slippers to the game. Like, why are my feet so cold?
Well, all right. So here's the deal. Amateur Hour fans, anybody that's going to be at the playoff game, most likely I will not be. And so I think that Dirk is going to be looking for a prime tailgate for he and our three family members from Bogota, Colombia. You will, if able to host these men, be in the presence of some pretty amazing people. And I think you'll just have a great time. So if anybody is going to the playoff game and is going to be having a tailgate and is willing to take on, you know, four kind souls, I can pretty much guarantee that you're going to have a great time just being around Francisco, because boy, is that guy a trip. We love them all. And I'm going to do everything I can. If somebody wants to maybe call in a bomb threat to my restaurant, I'm not going to say aloud.
Oh, yeah.
What it is, but you know, I can, you know, send me a DM, slide into the DMs, and I'll maybe tell you, you know, if someone wants to call in that I've been kidnapped. Something.
You'll give a blueprint to the restaurant so that we know where to put the bomb.
Just help me out. Help me out.
Help me. Help me.
I don't know. We'll figure something out. I'm gonna try to be there, but we'll see.
Okay, closing. I do got some closing thoughts before we sign off here. I did want to point out just that it was the fifth best offensive DVOA season of all time, and that is adjusted for era. So it's not like this is just like the fifth best season ever. It was probably maybe the best, not adjusted. I didn't see where it ranked not adjusted, but adjusted, the fifth best of all time. Oddly enough, behind the 2002 Chiefs, who actually measured better in that. Probably just because it was not as offensive back then.
What happened?
They did score
two playoffs. Who did we lose to? Was that the no punt game?
Nobody. We had no. 2002 was I thought the best Vermeil offense, but it was like by far the worst defense. Where it was just like, I mean, it was worse than this season in terms of how good the offense was and how bad the defense was. And they went exactly 8-8. It ended. It was the season that ended in that rainy game at Oakland where we couldn't stop the run and they just ran for like 800 yards, I think it was. But one of the worst football games I've ever had to watch.
Chris Hansen's favorite Raiders game, he said.
Yeah. Oh, I bet. Because it was just like, it was pouring rain, so like we couldn't throw the ball. Priest Holmes had gotten injured, so we couldn't run the ball. And then we just couldn't stop them at all. It was just absolute torture for 3 hours.
Yeah.
And then so we scored 26 points in every game this season, which I think is important because even with the team the offense playing poorly sometimes and looking sloppy, especially like the last month or so, they're still able to eke out 26 points in every game, which is an amazing accomplishment, never been done before. And then I was just amazed by seeing the number one seed in the AFC, just the history of it. And so going back to 2009, here are the teams and quarterbacks that got the number one seed in the AFC. Colts with Peyton Manning, Patriots with Brady, Broncos with Peyton Manning, Broncos with Peyton, Patriots with Brady, Broncos with Peyton, Patriots with Brady, Patriots with Brady, Chiefs with Mahomes. So
one of those teams didn't win the Super Bowl, right?
What's that?
Well, I guess only one of those teams didn't go to the Super Bowl, not win.
Looks like two. Two of the one seeds didn't go to the Super Bowl. And they were probably beaten out, well, it was either Roethlisberger or the other of Peyton or Brady, obviously. But you know what? I can't wait to see that stupid, fucking, obnoxious AFC quarterback Super Bowl chart. You know, the ones with, like, Peyton and Brady and Roethlisberger's face all over it. In 15 years, we're going to have one of those, and it's going to be Mahomes' face all over it. It's going to be Deshaun Watson's face all over it. It's going to be Baker Mayfield's face all over it. Mm-hmm. So we get to look forward to that. I am already pumped to see that obnoxious graphic and rub it in everybody else's face. And that's really all I got. Just pointing out how amazing it is, how limited the one seed in the AFC has been to, monopolized by the top quarterbacks. And now that top quarterback is ours. He's ours. And, you know, the playoffs are his first real test here. First taste of playoffs with Mahomes. Hopefully we exercise all kinds of demons. And that's it. That's all I got for now. Getting pumped. Playoff Dirk is on the horizon.
Yeah, and this is just kind of a little get ready for it. Next week we will do a full-on opponent preview playoff extravaganza. So enjoy the games this weekend, everybody. Enjoy sitting back and relaxing at home as the one seed. Haven't been the one seed in over 20 years here in Kansas City. So let's relish this opportunity. Let's relish this moment to keep in mind that our quarterback's 23 years old and is going to be doing this for a long, long time. I got to get some music. I got to get something. What's a good "We Don't Have to Play This Weekend" song?
The Weeknd. I love The Weeknd. He's my favorite guy.
I don't.
Is he a guy or is he a band?
I don't know.
Band. A rap group. Is he a group?
Is he a rap group? Dude, I don't know. I don't even know who that is.
Who, The Weeknd?
Yeah.
You don't know who The Weeknd is?
No, I don't.
Wow.
Sorry.
Wow.
No, we're gonna if this will play, it's gonna be Gangstar. Yeah, how about that? Gangstar. This has been Amateur Hour. I'm Ryan Scott Hall. He's just Dirkinson. This is Gangstar with Full Clip. Because it's clips full. Because it's the weekend. It gets to chill. That's my reason.
So wait, Gangstar is the artist?
Yeah.
You don't know who the Weeknd is, but you know Gangstar?
I'm a hip-hop head. I like the 90s.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Them.
It's one.
Him or them.
Him or them.
What'd you Led get? Zeppelin. He is amazing. Aside, I love Led Zeppelin. He is amazing.
Yeah. Aside from your Chiefs stock there.
Sideline cap.
Sideline
cap.
Yeah. That's the one that sells out all the time, right?
I think so. I don't know. I didn't buy it.
I want the damn starter jacket. I want the white one so bad.
I want it dripped in Mahomes' sweat.
He should auction that off.
I want him to wear it into a sauna and then hand it directly to me so I can just slide my face all over the insides of it.
He said he told Josh Briscoe that his favorite Christmas gift was the hoodie that his girlfriend had made that had the picture of Lenny the Cool on it smoking a cigarette.
Lenny D.
Oh, that was pretty sweet.
That's sweet. That dude gets everything. He gets it. He gets it. I love him.
Last night, my girlfriend and I went to Buffalo Wild Wings to have dinner.
Oh, I love that place. Love that place. Best sports bar.
And the bartender put down like condiments and napkins and stuff. And there's a bottle of ketchup. And on the label of the Buffalo Wild Wings ketchup, it said, not just a condiment, like the world's condiment or something like that, where it was like trying to tell you that ketchup is king. And I was like, I kind of want to like send this to Patrick Mahomes. Like, I kind of want to just take a picture, maybe tweet it at him. But no, I'm not going to fall in line with all you ketchup loving schmucks. I don't like
ketchup. Well, good, because at the playoff game, we're gonna be doing shots of ketchup before the game. It's gonna get wild. Shit's gonna get wild.